Welcome to the weekly podcast from radiotoday.co.uk. I'm Trevor Dan. David Lloyd's here as well with some more radio moments. Stuart Clarkson has the latest radio news. But first, we're off to the mailbox for a wander around the headquarters of BBC Birmingham. It's 12 years now since the corporation's previous premises at Pebble Mill were demolished. Since then, the Midland region has lost programmes to Salford and to Bristol. But when I sat next to the man who runs the place these days, Joe Godwin, at the Gillard Awards, he told me that the BBC is growing again in Brum. And he invited me to come and see.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics. Innovative solutions for creative radio people.
So, Joe, I said to you, the mailbox, that's just full of tumbleweed. And you said, not anymore it isn't, because I'd been on a tumbleweed eradication thing. So, here we are. First of all, why is it called the mailbox?
First of all, it's called the mailbox because the site that we're on and the building that we're in used to be the Royal Mail's main sorting office in Birmingham. Built in the 60s, closed in the 80s or 90s, and it was then redeveloped, turned into a mixed-use building. There are big offices like the BBC here. There's a couple of other commercial office partners. There's a shopping centre and there's lots of restaurants. So the whole complex is known as the mailbox. What I call this place that we're in is BBC Birmingham. It's become known as the mailbox, but the mailbox is more than the BBC, and I'm trying to get the words BBC Birmingham back as the name for this place that you can see here.
So you've got BBC Three telly here, and you've got some HR people I saw over there, but we're most interested in radio. So what kind of radio do you do here, Joe?
Well, BBC Three telly on its way, moving here from being based in London. I think there's about 30 different bits of the BBC based here, because I know this isn't what you asked me, but I'm going to tell you anyway. Part of what I'm trying to do is to make the place a very mixed economy, because I think all eggs in one basket is a recipe for things going tumbleweedy again. So it's about trying to make it as much a microcosm as of the bigger BBC as we can. So we've got HR, the BBC Academy is based here. We've got big bits of BBC engineering based here. But in terms of radio, we've got fantastic things like the Archers for Radio 4, which has always been here since the day it started in the 50s.
Can we go and see the studio?
Yeah, we're going to have a look. Although they're actually in the studio recording today, so they probably won't let us in, but we'll press our noses up against the window.
But we can look through the window.
Yeah, and then they'll probably throw a bucket of water over us or something. So we've got the Archers. Radio 4's home front is produced and recorded here. We've got a brilliant radio drama studio. We've got BBC Local Radio in the form of Radio WM.
And they're over there on that range of desks.
They sort of live over there, and their studios are... I'll show you those as well. We have a big contingent of the BBC Asian Network based here. Their main base is in London, but as you probably know, they started off in Leicester and came via Birmingham. Some of them headed off down to London, but we're still pleased that we've got a big lump of the Asian Network here. And then the other thing, which is radio-related, which relates to local radio across England, is all the engineering support and monitoring for all 40 local radio stations happens here in BBC Birmingham. And you've no doubt heard about Vylor, the virtualisation of radio studios. A lot of the development and testing and building of that has happened here in Birmingham. So it's always been, since the days of Pebble Mill, and maybe even beyond, BBC Birmingham has always been a centre of English regions, whether that's regional television or local radio, and I'm pleased to say that continues.
Can we go and look at these studios then?
Yeah, absolutely.
Can you walk and talk?
I'll try.
Okay. I was going to ask you about the whole idea of people from different disciplines brushing up against one another. Do you think it's working creatively that you can have people doing different things on adjacent desks?
I think it's a good idea, and I think it is worth doing. I can't walk and talk, I've just realised. I think the problem is, as you'll remember, is that those adjacencies can only turn into something if the organisational lines allow it to. Because as you know, from when you ran BBC Music Entertainment and other things, getting something done is about the line of control of the budget. So all the nice, warm, cosy stuff of adjacencies and sitting next to people and rubbing up against people and I think can come up with ideas, but to get it to the next stage of turning it into something is often more complicated.
You were saying to me that your job is to be a kind of a mascot for Birmingham, in a sense, that your job is to tell not just the BBC but the rest of the world that Birmingham is a creative place. How does that work in terms of the BBC structure then? Who's your boss?
Well, I suppose there's about three components to my role in the Midlands. One is to show some leadership here in BBC Birmingham, to try and encourage the idea that all these 30 little outposts of other BBC departments have something in common, which is called BBC Birmingham. So that's about the culture of the place, the buzz and the vibe of the place. I think outside the BBC, it's my job to wave the flag for the BBC and say, we haven't gone anywhere, we are here, we're pleased to be here. We're trying to build a BBC that this city and this region deserves, and to play nicely with people, whether it's working with other cultural bodies in the region, whether it's working with local politicians. And then inside the BBC in London, it's you know, people jump into cleaners' cupboards when they see me come in. But I see my job as to not let any conversation happen without somebody saying, what about the Midlands?
So I've got a production issue here, which is we've got to walk to the studio, but you don't want to talk.
Can we pause?
Shall I just do a fade out? Oh, I do editing, but I think I'll just walk off here and I'll just fade it down very gently.
Let's get you home and then you can make your call.
No, we've got to do it straight away.
Well, at least get yourself properly dressed.
Where's the number? Look, Roy, there's another.
Yeah, and two down there. Look, can you see? It's not good.
It's terrible. What do you think's happened?
Not sure.
And there's more of them behind those reeds. Oh, great. Found it. Right in front of my eyes.
At least drink your hot chocolate, will you?
In a minute.
Environment Agency incident hotline, can I help?
Yes, my name's Kirsty Miller. I'm calling from Ambridge in Borsetshire and I'm standing beside the River Am. And there's something you need to come and check out urgently.
What appears to be the problem?
The river is full of dead fish.
So this is the main drama studio?
Yeah. Now, I'm not a radio drama expert, but people tell me that the radio drama studio here in Birmingham is brilliant. I have been in there. I know how they record outside bits and indoor bits with the different acoustics and the dead room. And going in there is brilliant because that studio is the home of the Archers. So in there, as you would expect, are taps and sinks with running water, Argas, whose doors can be closed when Jill is baking, and it's fantastic, and every doorbell in Ambridge is in there. So that's where the Archers is recorded for 1 week in a month. That's where they do that. And when it's not the Archers in there, Radio 4's other brilliant drama, Homefront, is made in there, which is about the centenary of World War One. So that's been a four-year project, which will come to an end. Was the armistice in November?
November 1918.
So I don't think Homefront will go on beyond that, because I don't think we can extend the First World War retrospectively. So that's where all of that happens, which is fantastic, and is you know, it's a real jewel in BBC Birmingham's crown, is having that brilliant radio drama here. And we have studios along here used by the Asian Network.
Can we go down here?
Yeah. And one of those, we have a studio that isn't used so much at the moment, and we're looking at whether that can be turned into a green screen video studio for BBC Three to use.
Ah, right. I mean, these are not old, these studios, are they?
No.
That one should. You can't get in there.
Ah. This is the embarrassing moment where we see how little influence I've got.
You're in.
So they may be on air, but they're not. So the interesting thing about these studios, Trevor, is they're not bad. They're probably built about 2004, I suspect, so they're not the oldest studios in the world. Asian Network use these studios. When they're not using them, because obviously some of the Asian Network programming comes from elsewhere, BBC Academy use them to record podcasts. So they're very flexible spaces, and we've occasionally had visitors like Greg James did his Radio 1 show from here, and we can hopefully do even more things like that and attract even more people to use
them. So part of your I'm guessing your strategy is to try and make more output up here.
Yeah, I think
for a variety of places. So could you do, I don't know, offline stuff, some podcast work?
I think so. And there's ideas about when BBC Three is based here of whether there's podcast opportunities. It's for a couple of reasons. One is to use this place and these facilities. But it's not just about activity and work. It's about the stories that we tell. Because I think if you make stuff in the Midlands and hear the voices and tell the stories of the Midlands, you're more likely to do that making it in the Midlands. So it's both stuff going on here, but it's not activity for activity's sake. It's about hearing those voices and those stories of this part of the UK. So this is our Arches exhibition, which we opened at the end of last year, because we've always made the Arches in Birmingham. And this is great, and people come from across the world to visit it. And this is the Ambridge Village notice board, where people who visit our exhibition write their comments.
And it does look like a village notice board.
And I haven't had the chance to scan any of these from sending
them. I'm a big fan. I hope it never ends, says Chris.
I'm 16 and I love the Arches because the only drama I feel I belong to, says 16-year-old Cameron. Isn't that fantastic?
You wouldn't expect that, would you?
You wouldn't. It's a show I could never get bored of. Thank you for providing Mum with some drama to look forward to every week. So people come from all over the place.
And you've got a life-size David Archer.
You've got a life-size David and Ruth. Is Ruth really that size and David that size? Who knows? You can put the wellies on and have a photo taken with them. And there's some interactive stuff about the Arches.
We're just looking into reception now, and there's that thing called the Blue Room next to the Dalek. Now, is this your sort of public-facing area?
Yeah, so the public space here at BBC Birmingham has always had a variety of stuff. We do tours here. We sell lots of tour tickets to people to look around the place. But the Blue Room we brought in about 2 years ago. There is a Blue Room at the BBC in London and in Salford, but they're not open to the public. They're sort of inside. But what the Blue Room is it's two things. It's a technology showcase of the very latest technology, whether it's 3D, whether it's 4K, whether it's mobile, whether it's voice-activated devices. But we combine it with showcasing BBC content on it. So it's run by BBC R&D. But the brilliant thing about the Blue Room here in Birmingham is people can come in off the street, wander in here, have a look, and somebody will explain it to them. So it's a great way of both helping visitors, passers-by of all sorts and ages, find out about the latest stuff in quite an informative way, but also see what that might mean for their license fee and what we do with it. What we're increasingly doing is getting school groups to come in as well, have a tour of BBC Birmingham, because it, again, going back to one of my many things I'm trying to do is just to remind people in Birmingham and the West Midlands and the Midlands that there's a big old BBC operation here where people work and people make stuff. But as we were saying earlier, it's slightly less visible than it used to be.
Well, it looks like a shop.
But as you've seen, it's quite extensive, isn't it?
One of the things we just walked past is the Vialor headquarters, as it were, where all of BBC local radio is effectively run from an engineering point of
view. So the engineering monitoring happens here, and increasingly with Vialor engineering, sorry, this is going to sound a bit wanky, interventions happen here as well. But what the guys there are doing in the Broadcast Support Centre is they can see and hear and monitor the output of all the local radio stations, all the regional TV stations. And this is a real hub for that English region's broadcasting.
Joe, thank you.
Pleasure. Thanks for coming.
Joe Godwin, who doubles up as director of the BBC Academy and director of the BBC in the Midlands. Though, as you heard, he prefers BBC Birmingham. Either way, he's got space, he's got studios, he's got ambitions. So I think we'll hear more BBC radio and online audio from the mailbox soon. This is the Radio Today programme. David Lloyd to come. Now here's Stuart Clarkson.
Thanks, Trevor. Tributes this week have been paid to the West Midlands presenter Ed Doolan, who's died aged 76. He was at BRMB from 1974 before a move to WM in 1982. He'd done a Sunday show on the BBC station for the last 5 years after giving up his weekday slot. In 2015, he revealed he was battling dementia. He was in the Radio Academy Hall of Fame, had an MBE and a Sony Gold. BBC WM has been airing special tribute programmes to Ed this week. The former Radio 1 Capital Heart and Smooth presenter David Kidd Jensen has announced he's been living with Parkinson's for the last 5 years. The kid also did the Nescafe Network chart in the 80s and early 90s. He says he's gone public because he wants to raise awareness of the condition. A big schedule shuffle at Wireless Group's digital station Talk Radio, with all the weekday lineup changing this week. Julia Hartley Brewer's moved to breakfast, her mid-morning slot's taken by Mike Graham. Jamie East will do 3 months on afternoons instead of John Holmes. And Eamon Holmes joins the station for Drive, replacing Sam Delaney. Paul Ross from Breakfast moves to overnights, and there's a new early breakfast with former LBC presenter James Max. Changes at Virgin 2 as Eddie Temple Morris takes over the weekday mid-morning slot instead of Jamie East. Former XFM Breakfast presenter Danny Wallace is back at the station, now obviously called Radio X. He's covering Sunday mornings while Russell Brand is off for a while. KISS has some new shows and presenters and a new cross-platform content manager, David Farrar, who joins from Capital. Tom Green takes over Sunday to Thursday evening, 7 to 11pm, while KISS Chosen One winner Sam Darlaston will do the 11pm to 2am late show. There are also new online on-demand channels, KISS Jams and KISS Grime. Free Radio has a new regional content director, Andy Ashton, takes over from Mike Newman, who's leaving after 8 years. Andy will report to Bauer Northwest and Midlands content director Chris Pegg. Leica Radio is putting its brand on the Sound Digital National DAB Multiplex. The firm's been given a digital sound programme licence by Ofcom to join D2. And entries are now open for the New York Festival's International Radio Programme Awards. The awards will be handed out in New York on the 18th of June this year. More details about the categories and how you can enter at radiotoday.co.uk.
Your best content, shareable and discoverable on any platform. Oasis from Broadcast Bionics helps you build a closer relationship with your listeners. Welcome to the social studio at bionics.co.uk.
David Lloyd. Radio Moments. Who's your biggest radio influence? Many established greats point to Jack Jackson, who died this week 40 years ago.
Cupid, are you sure you can hit him?
Don't worry.
I'm not worrying, but I want to make quite sure that you get him. Now, fire.
Smile. You've been listening to The Good Times and their record, Powder Your Face with Sunshine, and that's on Decca.
I've got a surprise for you. Where are you?
I'm hiding.
Well, what do you know? He's brought her a Christmas present already, by my life. Well, it's as Elvis says.
The first influence was Jack Jackson, because he was the first guy who actually had fun on the radio. Because all the rest of them were sort of, we better behave because we're in Broadcasting House and Lord Reith might drop a brick on us any second, because he was rather severe. But Jack Jackson had a studio in the Canary Islands, so he was free from all this collar and tie stuff. So he used to just throw a few records together with sketches, comedy sketches, and bits of daft LPs and things. He actually knitted together quite a jolly show.
Hello there, record lovers everywhere, and welcome to Record Roundabout. For some time now, the director of Jodrell Bank has been receiving strange radio signals from Uranus.
I know, for an extra $5, you'll tune both your ear holes into family favourites.
Ah, what an exciting...
Jack Jackson, who died this week in 1978. He was a trumpeter and a band leader, and also heard as a DJ with a sophisticated act on Radio Luxembourg, The Light Programme, and Radio 2 as well. As you heard, he influenced Kenny Everett and Noel Edmonds too, amongst many others. 50 years ago this week, a familiar quiz show arrived at Radio 2.
I have very much pleasure, Mrs. Thomas, in presenting you, on behalf of the BBC, this dictionary, which we hope that you'll find useful.
I'm sure.
Now, it really is too large for me to hand to you formally, but I would like to read you the inscription which is inside. It says, presented by the BBC to, and there we have to put your name in, of course, winner of the nationwide general knowledge contest, What Do You Know?, and holder of the title, Brain of Britain, 1961. Many congratulations from us all.
Thank you very much.
An early edition of Brain of Britain, which debuted on Radio 2 this week in 1968, later moving to Radio 4. The programme had begun as a slot in another programme called What Do You Know?, as you heard there. To commercial radio now, and a major new breakfast show in Yorkshire this week, 15 years ago.
Ah, dear me. Good morning, it's 6.02, number one for Dance and R&B. This is Galaxy 105. Good morning from Hursty. This is brand new to Galaxy 105. This is your new breakfast show. This is Hursty's Daily Dose. I'm Hursty. Hi, she's Jojo.
I'm still here, guys. Still here, only just.
We've dusted her down and given her a shaking back and she's flying now.
Smell the freshness.
Get it on. And Mr. Danny Oaks, good morning.
Hello, how are you?
You're new as well, aren't you?
I'm quite new, yes.
Well, you're welcome. And we have a producer as well. He's James.
We were very blessed and very lucky that we were three individuals that were very different from different walks of life. Jojo, the mother hen, she held the show together. She was the glue. Danny, the voice of reason. Myself, the radio geek, the person with honesty Tourette's, would share literally everything. And what an incredible bunch of programme directors too, both at Chrysalis and at Global, Mike Cass, Brent Tobin, Alex Jungis. They allowed us to have our heads, to be able to create. And that's something I yearn for again.
Stephanie Hurst on the first Hursty's Daily Dose, heard on Galaxy from Leeds this week in 2003. It was to become one of the UK's biggest shows. That station now forms a key northern part of the Capital Network, a network whose roots stretch back to this week in 1973.
You're listening to an engineering test transmission being made by the Independent Broadcasting Authority.
We're transmitting on 557 kilohertz, that's 539 meters, and also 719 kilohertz, that's 417 meters in the medium wave band, and also now on 95.8 megahertz FM in the VHF band. These tests are in preparation for the opening of independent local radio in London this autumn. 539 meters medium wave and 95.8 VHF will carry the general service of Capital Radio. And 417 metres medium wave and 97.3 VHF will carry the news services of the London Broadcasting Company, although tests have not started yet on 97.3 VHF.
Is it in stereo?
The tests on VHF are not in stereo, but it's expected that VHF music programmes, when they begin, will include stereo.
The first commercial radio transmitters switched on, or independent local radio, as we had to call it back then, this week, 45 years ago. A few days ago, Bauer announced it had raised an impressive £25 million for charities across its stations. Well done. And this week, 13 years ago, the whole of UK commercial radio gathered together for a 12-hour fundraiser.
Tony Blair's giving his backing to UK Radio Aid, the biggest commercial radio fundraising event ever. More than 200 radio stations across the country, including LBC News 1152, will be joining forces for 12 hours to raise funds for the children affected by the Southeast Asian tsunamis disaster. The Prime Minister has told LBC News 1152 he's only too happy to take part.
It's a major thing, isn't it? I mean, it's made a tremendous impact on everybody, and if it helps for me to get involved, then I'm very happy to do it.
Well, it's the PM at AM. He's with us between 8 and 9. And then every hour we've also got an acoustic performance from huge, huge names. And we've got a prize every hour to give away, which is two tickets at my table for the Brits. So that should be quite fun.
Radio Aid on UK commercial radio this week in 2005. The programme notably also featured, as you heard, the first Chris Evans radio appearance for some time, which was to speed him to his current berth at Radio 2. The art of radio commentary is now well established. The first was heard 91 years ago this week. It was rugby.
Well, the first half has been about as exciting as anyone could wish for. Oh, I can't go there. They're off again. They're changing over. Pearl's taking it. He's kicking to the left. Wales defending the south end now.
Come on.
Harding's throwing it in. A fairly long one. England have it. I think it's Tucker. It's down on the ground. England have heeled. Out to Wharton. Now to Laird. Corbett. Locke. Out to Gibbs. Gibbs is going down the line. He's got past Andrews, and he's up to the 25.
The first ever running sports commentary. Rugby it was, with former Harlequin player Teddy Wakelam this week in 1927. England versus Wales, by the way. Final score, 11-9. 1990 now, and Coventry gets BBC local radio at last.
There will be more news and information in our breakfast programme than there is in the average commercial radio station. There will be more speech overall in our output. Our speech to music ratio will be something like 60% speech, 40% music. I think, with all respect to commercial radio, we will be more genuinely local radio for Coventry and Warwickshire.
So all the preparations are over, and now CWR begins its daily programmes, bringing people together throughout Coventry and Warwickshire.
BBC CWR launched only on FM. So with Chris Evans hosting his last Radio 1 breakfast show 21 years ago...
He'd asked the BBC management to have every Friday off, but it refused and he resigned.
The last famous Saturday Club with Brian Matthew on Radio 2 49 years ago...
You know, there have been quite a lot of songs lately with slow, sad introductions that break into a bright beat after a few bars.
Talk Radio UK becoming Talk Sport 18 years ago...
Talk Radio UK. It's the talk of the nation.
WABC launching with Easy Oldies in the Black Country 29 years ago.
So if you want to squeeze one in there, you've got about 2 minutes to call us at WABC.
And Radio 1 becoming the first station to have a million subscribers on YouTube 4 years ago. Those are this week's Radio
Moments. And that's it for this week. With thanks to David Lloyd and Stu Clarkson, to Joe Godwin at BBC Birmingham, and of course to you for listening. This has been a TDC production. I'm Trevor Dan, back with more next week. Cheers.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creating and distributing clever software for radio.